Everybody, we are live. Ignore my background. I've got shit everywhere in my basement right now. Stuff going on. Not that I've ever had any background that was worth the shit anyway. But tonight we are doing a special event so we could accommodate for my guest who also does a podcast on Tuesdays. Chris is out tonight. I don't know why. I guess he's pretending to be busy, probably some stupid Cyclone fan production thing. He's probably given money to the We Will Collective in some way, shape, or form tonight. Anyway, so again, we are it's a special night. It's a Wednesday night. Hopefully some of you are tuning in, and Andrew is our producer tonight. So hopefully he can hang in there and our diatribes won't bore him too much. And we're going to have questions tonight, too. So anybody that's watching live, four or five of you, feel free to ask a question. Andrew, just pop those up when they come. I'm not going to be able to see them unless you do that. So without further ado, we are going to bring on one of my best friends in this business. I met this dude. Got to have been friends for somewhere between 10 and 15 years at this point, maybe even longer. One of my most favorite people in the world. Somehow we just hit it off right away, and we've been pretty good friends ever since that first week we were ever together. So everybody, please welcome my good friend Tony Rock. There he is.
Blake.
What's up, brother?
I'm good. How's everything?
Good, man. Doing well. You just got back from the Bahamas?
Yes. Charleston and I went for his fourth birthday. We actually went for his third birthday, and he talked about it the entire year. Every time we left the house, he was like, are we going to the Bahamas? So I'm like, all right, I guess that's the spot. And we went back for his fourth birthday. The wait staff, the hotel staff remembered him. They treated him like a king. It was amazing. I had a great time.
Three-year-old spending a year talking about the Bahamas. Did you ever think in a million years that would be your life?
No, not at all. And I make sure that I make him aware of the fact that, like, besides the parties and the, you know, running around and building sandcastles and all the stuff we do, right. I always take a minute to just sit in the sand with him. I'll take a day and say, like, whoever's there, my family and friends, hey, just give me an hour with my child. Let me go sit in the sand, no toys, and I let him know, hey, me and Grandpa never got to do this. Me and Grandpa never did this. His entire life. So I'm going to make sure that we have these moments as many as we can for as long as we can.
I think I've talked to you about this before, and I'm so jealous in a way that you had your first child this late in life. Like, how much better of a father I would have been. I mean, my son's about to be 22 this month, and where I'm done, I mean, I'm done. He's off the payroll. So. Like, that's all good, but just like I can tell that you're taking time to smell the roses. You're taking time to appreciate and understand that he's not going to be this small forever. Like, I didn't have that perspective in my 20s.
Right. I get it. I it's a blessing that I did wait this long, because I would have been just some guy running the street like, oh, yeah, I got a son, by the way. You know, he would have been an afterthought. Because not even like a bad parent way, but a lot of times guys are still trying to find themselves. They're trying to get their, they're trying to establish their money and where they're going to live and, you know, their job situation. So you're just still growing in every aspect. So you can't really dedicate yourself to being a parent, a dad, like you really should. I happen to be later on in my years, financially established. You know, my job is what it is at this point. And, you know, I could just really, really spend the time. Plus, based on the losses that I've had in my life, it made me realize that how precious life is. And, you know, the fact that my dad is not around and my dad will never get to see his grandson makes me want to pour into him even more, like all the stuff that his grandpa taught me that I will impart to him.
How old were you when you lost your dad?
I was 18.
Same age my dad was when he lost his.
I was a bad kid in high school, so I had to go to summer school every year. Like, I would do a whole year, ninth grade, then the whole summer school. 10th grade, whole summer school. So I didn't graduate until the following year, the first day of school, I had to go to school and get my diploma. And I came home and showed it to my parents, and my mom was unbelievable, like blown away. My dad was like, oh, good job. But he was already sick. His health was already deteriorating. So I just remember that, like, damn, like I wasted all that time not being a good student and not listening, and turned around and he was gone. And I just realized, like, okay, that was a horrible way to lose your dad and a space to be in with him. So I was like, going forward, you know, when I have a kid, man, it's going to be all about that baby. It's going to be all about that kid.
And it was diabetes, right?
He was
diabetic.
Yeah.
So was he type 1, type 2?
No, it was complicated. It was diabetes, and then he had a perforated ulcer, and burst, and the internal bleeding, along with the complications from diabetes, made it one hard to treat the other, and, you know, and that was it, man. I was, for 5 years, I was in a depression. I was just floating around for the next 5 years. So my brothers did it, like me and my brother Brian's birthday was yesterday, and we were talking about like family stories, and I was like, you do remember, I don't remember a lot of these dates. And he's like, oh yeah, that's right. Cause for 5 years I was just in a funk. So when they tell me stuff, it's like, I think I was there, but I couldn't tell you names and dates and all that. Cause I was gone.
You can like only really remember how you felt during that time.
Yeah. I remember seeing people at a function. Like, what year was that? Oh, that was that year. Okay. I don't remember.
Yeah, that's all like one big long year or something.
Yes.
I mean, that's the biggest blow to the gut. I mean, your dad's like your first hero, you know?
Yep.
Like, I'm fortunate I have both of my dads still. My dad and my stepdad, both are still around, which you've partied with my stepdad. I was just telling my little brother about I said, hey, dad, dad's probably going to watch tonight because Tony's on. And my brother didn't know that. I was like, dad whipped a nae-nae.
Yes, yes, he did. Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, man.
Look, people are going to watch, like, how the hell do these two know each other? Like, we got stories, man.
We got stories for sure. That's what's, you know, and we'll get into that. I don't want to miss this topic yet, though. I don't want to lose this topic yet. But so your dad being diabetic, which, you know, it's been a year now since I was in the hospital. And, like, I know you sent me a message last year when I was in the hospital. It was about a year ago, these past 2 weeks. And that's what I had, pancreatitis. And the reason I got, well, I was, you know, partying a lot, but also, which you're to blame probably for some of that, but also,
I didn't have the baby then. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But also, I'm diabetic now. The reason I got pancreatitis was because I was diabetic and didn't know it.
Oh, wow. So wow.
Which I have type 2. I don't know. Did your dad have it his whole life?
I believe so. Yeah, I believe so. I always remember him being cautious of what he ate. He was like, my entire life, he was always, always cautious of what he ate.
Was he on insulin and
stuff? No medication. No insulin? No.
Okay,
no.
Gotcha. Yeah, so that, I mean, that's where I all my numbers were way, way up there when I was in the hospital, but like I've got everything. In fact, I just got my A1C from the doctor today and I'm under the diabetic range. So I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. But, I was just curious. It's funny because when I got that diagnosis, you were literally the first person I thought about.
Oh, wow. Like,
when I found out I was diabetic, you were literally the first one because of your dad. And I remember talking to you about it. And so, like, I've been making sure that I train, you know, like, I mean, my son's obviously he's in his 20s, but, you know, I want to make sure I'm around.
Right.
Help him out. Right. You know what I mean? Right. Like, and a lot of it, I've made plenty of lifestyle changes, but I'm still struggling. Like, I'm struggling, like, getting weight off and stuff. And
are you exercising?
I am, yeah. And I fell off because I hurt my back. A week ago yesterday, I was walking down the stairs and stepped on a dog toy and my feet went out from under me and I just landed straight on my back on the steps, like nothing to break my fall. It was like a car wreck, just all the impact. And so I've barely been able to move for a week. I gained 10 pounds in the last week.
Oh, wow.
I haven't moved. Like,
yeah, diet and exercise, man, is very, very important. If anybody's out there listening with diabetes, It's not the end of the world. You can live a normal life. It's exactly. Just making some changes to your diet and get some exercise in every once in a while. You know, I started the foundation because of my dad as well, the My Rock Foundation. Exactly. And that's just to educate people about diabetes. So it's just a lifestyle change and you'll be fine. Like, it's not, don't be afraid and panicked. You don't have to go on medication immediately. Just diet and exercise.
We should do like a Beatus tour. We could do like a diabetes education tour, and I'll just go. I'll be like, hey, I'm diabetic. Now here's 45 minutes of jokes that have nothing to do with diabetes at all. And then we'll just put like pictures of Wilford Brimley up, and you know,
Wilford Brimley.
It's crazy. Do you have a system? Like when you're writing, you always struck me as somebody that mostly just writes on stage.
I write on stage a lot. Yes. But I also,
go ahead. Sorry.
I also put pen to paper. And that process is like, okay, what's the thing I want to say? What's like, it's almost like high school. It's like, what's the aim? And then the beat, the bullet points I want to make sure I get to in this particular topic. But a lot of, then I'll take that on stage and write it on stage as well.
Right, right. So you bring, I mean, you, but you're going up with a premise more or less.
Yes.
And you, and you have something you want to make sure you hit.
Yeah. And a lot of times when I'm doing like workout rooms, I write a bunch of premises on a sheet of paper and just, I take it out on stage and go, okay, here's a premise, and just throw it out and see what happens. And a lot of times I get really good stuff from doing that.
I mean, and your podcast now is, that's on Tuesdays.
Every Tuesdays Tuesday? At 6:30, live from the green room. Thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah, absolutely. You might get one or two listeners.
Yes.
Off of this, like this is where I'm fortunate. I can have, because you're on here. You're obviously helping me way more than I'm helping you. Like, ain't nobody's going, hey, did you see that guy Tony Rock on Bill Blake's show? Nobody's going to do that. So, you know, you might get one or two.
One or two are welcome,
but anyway, so do you find, what is that, just comics talking about comedy? I mean, what's the theme?
Well, the theme, it started like this. It started, so I would do the shows on a weekend, and then after Sunday's show we would sit in the green room and I would go live on my Instagram and just talk about the weekend. Like, you know, if we had something interesting happen during one of the shows, they were like, Friday 10 o'clock show, you guys missed it, it was on, and we would tell the story of what happened. And then we would let the wait staff in on it. It like kind of morphed into something else. Well, the wait staff would come in the room and they would tell us about all the crazy things that happened that weekend that we were working that we didn't know about.
Right.
And then one of my friends called me and said, hey man, I was watching you live and I watched it the last 2 weeks in a row. That's a show, because nobody knows what goes on in the green room.
Right. Right.
And I said, damn, that's true. So that's why we call it Live from the Green Room, because it's an insight into the things we talk about in the green room. Comics just talking, comedy, whatever, because very many topics are covered, as you know, in a green room.
Yeah, it's, that's not like, my favorite part.
Right. So we literally go in every Tuesday and it's like, does anybody have anything? You got something? All right, we'll start with that and then we'll see where it goes. And then sometimes we have guests on to take it in a different direction. So it's a lot of great conversations.
Yeah, that's always been my favorite part of comedy. And that's, I mean, we've brought that up before. Like how unlikely our friendship is, and it's all because of comedy. Like,
right?
Like us even meeting each other in the first place is outlandish. It doesn't even make sense. Like I remember you doing, Todd and Tyler in Omaha.
Yeah.
One time, and I get a text from you. Like, we're talking about you on the radio right now, and I just hear you're saying something, and then I hear Colleen in the background. Well, he's friends with Bill Blank. So, and I can't, I mean, born and raised in Brooklyn, born and raised in Des Moines, Iowa. It's just weird.
It's, hey man, because comedy is comedy. Funny's funny.
Right. And but how many people have we worked with in our careers? I mean, it's hundreds, thousands.
Yeah.
And like, it's funny how, I mean, we're not that far off in age, but like me and you hit it off right away. Like we were just a hang right away. And that's just amazing to me. With our, cause in a way our backgrounds are similar. Like
we have similar backgrounds. You wouldn't know it to look at us.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm trying to put it into words. Like, if you put both of our like families on paper, you would think I was the one that was from Brooklyn.
Like, really?
If you like, I came from a broken family. I got brothers and sisters from different moms and dads. And, like, I got all that. Your parents stayed together. Everybody was.
My parents were together. All my siblings look alike.
Yeah, everybody's a rock.
Everybody's a rock.
Nobody has a different last name. Like, you don't have to explain shit.
We don't have that one brother that shows up every holiday.
Yeah, this. How often do you guys all get together? What is it? Is it 11?
Now, because of the babies, the other babies aren't babies anymore. Chris's children are both in college. His oldest daughter is in his oldest daughter is in culinary school in Paris, France.
Nice.
His youngest daughter goes to USC. She's about 10 minutes from me. Right. So they're not babies anymore. And then my brother Andre has three boys, and they're all, one graduated college. He's doing real estate in Maryland. The other is in college playing football. And the other, his youngest, kids are so oblivious to things when good things happen. Yeah, so they called me back. I took this test for the post office, and they called me back, and I got the job. And we're like, dude, what are you talking about? Yeah, the post office hired me. I'm like, you know, you could do that for the next 20 years and be good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's like, good. Oh, that's... yeah, just call me. I took the test, and they called me. He's like, he might be 20 years, like maybe 21. I'm like, you do that shit till you 41, retire.
Yeah, full
and
pension.
And be good.
Like, yeah. All that shit that you never, but did you think about that in your 20s?
In my 20s, I took the test. I actually took the test for the subway.
Yeah.
And I remember taking the test, sitting in the room like, I don't want to do this shit.
Right. Right.
I might have taken that shit at like 18, like whatever age you are eligible to take it, whatever that age is. I took it, and I'm in the room looking at people like, "What? I don't want to get this fucking job."
But see, your mom was a school teacher, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And what did your dad do?
My dad was he drove a truck for the New York Daily News, but my dad would work. You know, he drove a taxi. He would get off work and drive a taxi, or he would get off work and go to another job. He worked 80 hours a week. He worked two full-time jobs a week. And the crazy thing is, I never felt like in my entire childhood, I never felt like I didn't see him.
Really? That is amazing.
There was never a time I remember like dad wasn't there for this and that. It was like, wow, how do you pull that off?
Because there's how many of you? 11?
Seven boys, 8 boys, 2 girls.
10.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to live in New York with 10 children, you about have to work 7 jobs. How did he only work 2 jobs? And if your mom was a teacher, that's not, I mean.
Right. And then she stopped. And then she stopped working after like baby number 4 or 5. She's like, I just want to be with my kids.
Yeah. Well, so back then it was probably better.
Right, I mean, right. Absolutely.
Cost-wise.
Absolutely.
Because otherwise, I mean, how far apart? Is Chris the oldest?
No, Charles, then Chris, then Andre, then Tony, then Derek, then Brian, then Kenny, then Quan, then Andy, then Jordan.
Yeah, and Jordan's the youngest. Yes. Jordan's what, 24 or 5 George, now?
20. I think Jordan's like 27.
27?
Yeah.
And Chris is in, so what's that, almost 20 years apart, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So from oldest to youngest, I mean, I suppose she could have made Chris watch people.
Oh, no, that's what he says. He says when you have that many kids, you raise the first couple and then they raise everybody else.
Yeah, yeah. Did you feel at all like that? I mean, you're not far enough away, really. You probably feel like
no. I was close. I was close enough to get the life lessons, and not get the, you know, the talking down to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So yeah, a lot of times, that's so funny. A lot of times when we talk, a lot. This happens so much, Blanky. When Chris and I are talking, and I'll say, "Yeah, man, I remember you said that before. You said that, you know, sometimes in life people gotta." And he's like, when did I say that? I'm like, I don't know. I was like 15, 16. He's like, damn, you remember that? I'm like, yeah. And then a week later, we'll be talking. I'm like, you're the guy that said, you know, I remember one time I said, you're the guy that said, you know, expect a girl to treat you like shit. I always expect a woman to treat you like shit. You're happy if you're wrong. You're happy if you're right. And I was like, I told it back to him, and he's like, oh shit, you remember that? I'm like, yeah, I fucking live by that shit.
Did he make that up, or did he hear it somewhere?
I don't know.
Because that sounds like a very Chris thing to say anyway.
He also said years before I heard it in a movie, years before I heard it in A Bronx Tale, he was the one that said, somebody owes you money, they don't pay you back, good. It costs you that much money to get them out of your life.
Yes.
I saw it in Bronx Tale maybe 10 years later, and I was like, oh shit, Chrissy said that. Like, I thought they stole it from him.
Yeah. I can't remember if you and I talked about that or not, because I remember giving a guy $20 one night at a bar that's just fall down drunk dude. And I applied that logic to it.
Yeah.
And then I was drunk enough that I realized when I left, I was never going to see that fucking guy again. Anyway.
Exactly.
I should have just never gave him the $20.
Yeah. He gives a lot of the stuff I just say back to him. And he's just like, oh, I didn't know you remembered that. Whenever people, because once I started making money, it was, people are going to come. Family is going to come, and friends are going to come, and it's going to change everything. Women are going to be different. And he's like, always remember that the amount of money that people are asking for, they don't really need that much money. They just figure, if I have to, you know, come to him with my tail between my legs, so to speak, I might as well get a little more. Might as well get a little more. I'm going to ask for $500. Might as well ask for $2,500, you know? So I've always applied that as well. Whenever somebody had a sob story and wanted X amount of dollars, I would give them less. Give them what he would always say, give them what you can afford to not get back.
Yeah, and that's always a great philosophy when giving money.
Like, you need $1,000, I give you $200. Hey, you still got $200, and I'm not worried about it. So
yeah,
$1,000, I'd be fucking looking for you.
So you think like $200 is probably my limit then?
Nah, you good.
Yeah. So at what point did you feel like, I mean, do you feel like getting to the point where you are financially stable and doing comedy, what is that? Do you think that has helped your mental health? Do you think money has helped your mental health, or are there other things? Like, you lose your dad when you're 18. You've got an older brother who is one of the most, if not the most famous comic, arguably, in the world.
Right.
You know, how much imposter syndrome do you have? I know how bad my imposter syndrome is. I bet yours is through the roof sometimes.
Sometimes, but that was early on. And that's exactly why I did it. I tried to do it the right way. I tried to do the open mics and do the bringer shows and do because if your brother, any sibling passes, helps you get along further along, then you don't get the respect and the credibility from your peers.
I remember you telling me that Chris told you, like, don't expect shit out of me.
Yeah, yeah. Basically. Like, I'm not going to do anything for you. You know, if you want to do this, this is on you. And then once I got, you know, my legs under me and kind of started figuring out how to do this, then I was the one that said, no, I'm good. I don't need anything. And I'll work it out. I'll figure it out. So not a strong sense of imposter syndrome, but every once in a while, in the beginning, it was, I know why they're looking at me. I know why they're letting me in the meeting. I know why they let me in the audition. I know why. So it was that kind of, you know, that kind of.
It was it was more so getting to where you didn't apologize for that.
Right.
Because I mean, you're delivering the goods.
And that, right now, I'm 25 plus in. I'm 26 years in. It's like I think I'm here now, guys. I don't think it's Chris Rock's brother at 25 years in.
No,
you know. Been in some stuff. I've written some stuff. I've sold some stuff. I've, you know, done some things. I think you can call me you can just refer to me as Tony now.
When's the last time you ate a dick? Like, okay, actually, when's the last time you ate a dick and you were getting paid?
I remember doing a college. And this might not be the most recent, but I remember this one because I remember thinking, like, fuck, they paying me for this shit. I was doing a college somewhere in the Midwest, and they were just there because they were giving out free tickets. So the kids were there on their phones, and guys are talking to girls up in the back of the auditorium.
About it.
Right.
You can't say shit about it.
And it was one of those shows where it's like, don't talk about drugs, don't talk about sex, don't talk about. So I'm just like, hey, you guys, why don't we put our phones away and enjoy the show? And like, I'm trying to just talk to children.
Like a school teacher.
But these are 20 something year olds. They're, you know, they're like, fuck you, dude. Like, we don't, we just here because we was trying to get out the dorm room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just had, I was a guy just standing there for all intents and purposes. They didn't care who I was. They didn't care about no credits.
Oh, you're
and I remember the back of my neck sweating. And I'm just like, man, like how more time do I have to do? And I remember saying to myself, and they fucking paying me for this. Like, I feel bad that I'm going to take this money.
I just had it happen.
What happened?
I did a post-prom. First of all, I shouldn't be doing a post-prom.
Right.
Like, I can't relate to 17, 18-year-old kids. Especially in small-town Iowa, you know? And these post-proms, they're all being held hostage. They don't even really want to be there.
Yeah.
Like, it's just the parents... And trust me, their parents love them. They raise so much money.
Your parents are trying to keep you from fucking, okay? You heard it from
it's
me first.
100%.
They're trying to keep you somewhere where you won't fuck or get drunk or do some illicit drug.
That's exactly what it is.
And they think people that fuck and do illicit drugs are going to entertain you.
Uh-huh, 100%. And the thing is, here's the only reason. I mean, I'm still thinking about it. Like ways I could have done better. And it wasn't horrible by any means, but it was horrible for me.
Right.
Like, and I tried to tell them, this is my solace, is like, I said, you don't want a comic. You want a magician or a hypnotist. Like, you don't want a regular comic.
Right.
You don't. And they think, so I threw them a big number. Thinking that would price me out of it. And they said yes.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, now I got to do it. And they, what they don't understand is they think they're paying that much money because I'm that good. And it's going to be that good of a show for these kids. They don't understand they're paying me that money because this is going to suck. And this is how much you're going to have to pay me to go through it. And so, there was a lady when I first
met. You got to pay me that much to subject myself to this.
100%.
Right.
And there's this lady that kept thanking me passive aggressively for keeping it clean before I went up on stage. Like I get there and I introduce myself. Oh, thanks. Thanks again for keeping it clean for the kids or whatever. And I go, oh, that's not for the kids. That's for you guys.
Right. Right.
It's like you got the kids are fine. I was like, you guys are the ones that get uncomfortable. Kids will be great. It'd be great if you guys weren't here.
Like, this is a true story. I did a college one time and I get there and they said, hey, did they tell you about the Chris Rock rule? And I said, no, I was not made aware of the Chris Rock rule. And they said, yeah, we had Chris Rock here about, say, 7 years ago, 8 years ago. And we told him specifically, you can't curse, you can't talk about drugs, you can't talk about sex. And he walked right out on stage and said, yeah, so the school told me not to talk about sex and drugs and you know, curse. I figure, you know, you guys are graduating. Fuck that shit. Let's have a good time. And the auditorium just goes bananas.
Yeah. And then he did a regular show. And they were great, had a great time, and somebody back there tapping their foot, like, we told you not.
And they said it was a Chris Rock rule. And I'm like, well, maybe I might just break that rule tonight.
Did they not know they were talking to his brother? Like, not at all?
Remember. It was a long time ago. I don't remember.
It was so fucking funny. They thought your name was just Tony. And so... That's what I did. I got up. I did kind of a version of that in a way. I said, this lady has thanked me 100 times for keeping it clean for you guys. And I just want to know how many of you are 18. And a bunch of them raised their hands.
Yeah.
I was like, so here's the deal. You guys can go overseas and get shot in the face. But I say the F word in front of you, something bad might happen.
Yeah.
And they love that. And there's no It's like that. It's just like that cafeteria show at a college. There's no momentum to be had. There's no rhythm. Yeah. Half of them are on their phones. If they leave the place, they don't get any of the prizes.
Yeah.
And when they leave, somebody has to call their parents and tell them that they left. So they can't get away with shit.
They are hostages for the night.
It's 1:30 in the morning. They're fucking miserable.
God bless them. God bless all you kids that sit through that.
Yeah. So
and year after year after year.
I stole their fucking money. I mean, I tried to tell them.
As you should.
I mean, what am I supposed to...
Colleges have that surplus. They just pay...
Yeah, but this was a high school. This was like a bunch of parents in a small town in Iowa that had bake sales and shit to raise enough money to put all this together. And they gave me more than $1,000 to just eat a dick.
Man. For
30 minutes. And I even talked him into letting me only do 30. I knew how bad it was going to be. As soon as I walked in, you better be funny. I'm tired. Oh, well, we're fucked. Like, just right away.
They don't know what we go through sometimes.
Oh, my God. And have you ever had that where you're standing there and you're like, do you want to be me right now? Would you want to be me right now? You wonder how I get paid?
This is the life.
So, I'm trying to remember the last time. It was Omaha last time we were together.
Was it? Or was it Kansas City?
It was Omaha. It's been a long time since Kansas City. Kansas City was the first time I separated from my wife. And now we're full on divorced. But
like, wait, wasn't it? If I'm not mistaken, one time we were together and you were separated from your wife. And then one time we met up again somewhere on the road and you guys were back together or trying to work it out or something like that.
Yeah, we were back together the second time.
Yeah.
Or no, it was we separated and we were together in Kansas City. We separated. And then we did Orlando.
Right.
That same year. And that was like around Christmas. That was like the week after Christmas or the week leading up to Christmas. And like, it was getting better. Like,
oh really? Okay.
I want to say by February we were back together and then we separated again and we're back together for like 7 years. And then obviously 2 years.
Oh, ago. Wow. Wow. 7 years.
Yeah. Yeah. We almost made it 10 total.
Man.
Then yeah,
you,
it was.
What do you I think that devastated. Is? Like now, I don't want to take over your show, but what do you think that is? Like to break up and get back together, and break up and get back together.
Just being unhealthy, probably. Like, well, okay, originally, like, you know, like when we were together in Kansas City, that was like 2 days after I broke that dude's nose. Don't you remember?
I remember that. Yeah. I remember that. I remember that. Yes.
Yeah. Because I almost didn't get to the gig. I thought I was going to end up in jail.
Right, yeah.
But I got lucky. But, yeah, I don't know. Well, come to find out, she's just mostly just a sick person. She's like, she's basically a sociopath. Like,
so it was just comfortability. Like, you knew what it was.
Yeah, it was maybe some codependency, maybe.
Like, yeah, yeah.
And she's a person that always... Her pattern was always have another relationship ready to go. She treats it like it's a job.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying?
It's funny. I actually started writing a bit the other day about how people don't even know how to be in a relationship.
No, it's nobody knows how to be single.
A guy will just go, she's pretty. Like, I want to be with her. Like, but what does that mean? What do you really mean by that? Like, well, do you know what it entails?
How do you decide? I mean,
yeah, the questions that my life questions now are questions that I'm trying to figure out as well.
Yeah.
So I'm not
you've never been married. I've been married twice. No,
it's not like I know the answer and I'm just like asking people like, so why isn't you doing this? I'm asking because I don't know either.
Well, the thing is nobody wants to be alone the rest of their life, right? Nobody wants to die alone.
Right.
Well, it's really not like acceptable to be with anybody for that long every day unless you're fucking them. Like the rest of your life.
Has to be a payoff for this much time.
Yeah, like me and you could live together forever and die forever, but we can't fuck each other. Like If we could fuck each other, how great would life be? You got more money. I'll be the bottom at first, but you're going to have to let me. You're going to have to let me earn my way. Like, there's got to be, you know, we got to elevate each other.
You know, that's going to be the part of the whole podcast that they clip and go viral. It won't be like, hey, diabetes, you know, adjust your diet and exercise. You'll be fine. It's going to be, they're going to cut all that shit out.
If we could just, I mean, that's why a straight up out gay dude, they're the happiest people in the world. Like, a gay dude who's totally out, has all the support from his family and friends and stuff, like, you know, they're the happiest people on earth. There's something to be said for that. And that's how I know it's not a choice. Because if it was a choice, I would be gay as fuck.
And financially, I don't know what the secret is, but every time I watch House Hunters, the gay couple's budget is way more than the straight couple's.
That's called disposable income.
The gay couple's budget is like, oh, they're looking for about 7 bedroom. Our budget should be about $3.2 million. The straight married couple's like, yeah, we got $280,000 for.
Because like, we only got 2 mouths to feed, and that's it. That's 100%. Like every time, like my little sister is gay and married to a woman, and they're doing the, like, in vitro, like they're trying to have a baby, and I'm just like, why would you do that? You've got nothing to worry about but each other. But I mean, she has a son, her wife has a son from a previous relationship, so.
Oh, they want their own baby.
Yeah, there's already a kid there, so I mean, I get it.
Yeah, I get it.
But like, yeah, like when gay people are all about having kids, and it's like, is it just to say, like we want to be able to have kids just like everybody else? Like, is it just, do you really have that instinct that badly? Because to me, I'm like, you got it made, man. Like, why would you bring another mouth to feed into this? Why would you do that?
I guess it's a normalcy thing. Like, we want to, you know, not that it's not normal. I don't want no flack.
But I mean, it's the only way to put it.
Yeah. But you know, you say one word and it's
100%.
Floodgates.
100%. But we're not going to be accused of people that, we're not going to be accused of being people that are like against this shit. So,
right.
I think it's okay to speak freely. But anyway, go ahead. Normalcy. Yeah. I mean, everybody wants to feel like whatever they're doing is normal.
Exactly.
And to me, I feel like that's maybe our problem. Maybe that's where we're at with like cancel culture and yada, yada, yada. We go out of our way to make everyone feel normal and accepted, whereas they don't have to be the same thing. Like, first of all, what is normal? Who decides what normal is anyway?
Right.
And then, right. When it comes to acceptance, why can't you accept that it's not normal? Like, the word acceptance is what we're all talking about. Like, why can't you look at something and just say that it's weird, but it's okay that it's weird and celebrate the weirdness?
Oh, yeah. Or it's just weird to me.
Yeah. Why do we
not saying it's wrong or right, but, you know, the way it's like a million different variables, the way I was raised, what I was taught, what I believe, that right there is kind of difficult for me to grasp. Not saying I don't and I won't and I'm against it. That just, it's just weird to me.
Yeah. And it's not, it doesn't even mean that I'm indoctrinated. It just, it's just like this thing right here. Like, there's a reason that it's funny when monkeys put clothes on. Because they're not supposed to wear clothes.
Right.
So, like, anything outlandish that happens in the world, like, why is it not okay? Like, there's no way drag queens started out being drag queens to, like, it's outlandish. It's a show. Like, I don't think that people that were dressing in drag were doing it to make a statement. They were doing it for fun.
Yeah, originally, wasn't it just like a after hours show type thing they were doing?
Yeah, I mean, just any time. I mean, now, I mean, if you go to a gay bar now, it's like drag shows galore. That's kind of the main attraction most of the time. And somebody's always You know, it's like a drag show, lip syncing, you know, doing all kinds of performing and all that. Like, I feel like all that started out for just for a good time. And then they're made to feel like they're not allowed to have a good time. Like, you're not allowed to do whatever it is that you do, no matter whether it's hurting people or not. You shouldn't be allowed to do that for a good time. And then it turns into this whole civil rights issue. When it didn't have to get that far, it could have been just right. Like, oh, that's fucking weird, but I don't have to go to the show.
Just don't go, right?
Like, why can't you leave it at that? Why do we have to make everything normal? Why?
I agree.
You know? When's change last time?
What did they say? Change the channel, right?
Yeah.
When's last time, I mean, what?
Well, like a strip club, for example. There's always people talking, you know, wanting strip clubs out of their neighborhoods, or, you know, there's always a thing where there's a strip club too close to a neighborhood.
Oh yeah, it brings a certain element to the neighborhood.
Yeah, and it's like, well, you don't have to go.
And you don't own the neighborhood. And what's the element? What does that mean? Like the guy next door to you might be into that shit. So is he the element that
you just don't know about? Is he not part of the neighborhood?
Right, right.
Yeah, 100%. And that's why, I mean, I live in a very diverse neighborhood. In fact, I'm one of only two white people on my block, which is amazing in Des Moines, Iowa, if you don't live here. Like, nobody thinks that's
You wouldn't think that in Des Moines, Iowa.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty much why we hit it off, just because growing up, like, I just grew up going to all inner city schools and everything. So, you know, to me, obviously, it's not like there wasn't a culture shock when I went to New York. Because there was,
right,
but it wasn't as severe as people would think.
Right, right.
Like the school I went to, it was still, at the time that I went there, it was still predominantly white, like as far as numbers goes. But we were the most diverse school in the city. Well, now, even it's the most diverse. Like it's probably 75% minorities now.
Oh, wow.
And now when the white kids go to college, they are experiencing culture shock because everybody's white. Like the white kids that are graduating from my high school, they'll go to the University of Iowa. And it's a culture shock for them because almost everybody's white.
Man, this shit is white.
Yeah. Could you fucking believe that? And I say that all the time. Like, I find myself saying that's white people shit way too often for someone that is white. I say it all the fucking time. When was the last time you were at a strip club?
It's been a minute. It's been some time. I you know, when you got a baby, man, you just don't have that money to throw away so freely anymore.
Yeah, just fucking.
Yeah, it's like diaper. Like, that's like bottle.
Oh, and he's on the potty training.
Like, oh, no, he's trained. He's
potty trained. Yeah, he's trained. Potty trained now. Yeah.
Yeah. Get up in the middle of that. I got to pee. Just walk to the bathroom. Like, all right, bet. I love
like
it.
Like an old dude with diabetes. Just get up and go to the bathroom 5 times a night.
Oh, Andrew said, for sure, I'm going to have Chris clip that.
I don't know. Oh, he was going to play the having Chris. I don't know what he's talking about. I think he was. What are you doing? What's going on? I think he was going to play something. I don't know. What is that?
Can you hear me?
Yeah. I don't know. What are you doing, Andrew?
It said chat. It said one on the chat, and I pressed it.
Yeah. I don't know what it's from.
No, because when you said the thing about the. I said, that's going to be the part they clip and play. That's going to go viral.
Oh, I got it. Oh, yeah, for sure. Okay. Now I got it.
Yeah.
For sure. I got it. Okay. I'm sorry, Andrew. We probably do need to take a break, though, before I forget. So let's hear from our sponsor real quick, Revelton Distilling, and we'll come back with Tony Rock. Are you ready?
Why take the best corn in the world and make it into fuel when you could make it into whiskey? That's the question that launched Revelton, Iowa's most visible and fastest growing distillery. owners Rob and Christy Taylor embrace the grain-to-glass philosophy, sourcing ingredients locally and overseeing on-premises production and bottling at their facility in Osceola. One sip, and you'll agree that Revelton's handcrafted whiskeys, gins, and vodkas are the best you've ever tasted. And with the launch of their rye whiskey, made with 100% Iowa-grown rye and corn, and their new bourbon coming soon, there's more Revelton to love than ever. Iowa's own Revelton Distillery. ReveltonDistillery.com.
Where'd you put my hat, silly Billy?
Oh, there he is. We're back. You good? Are we wandering? Oh, there he is. What's up, man?
I'm eating.
What did you say? I'm eating?
I'm eating. He said, Peter, I'm eating.
Yeah, he's already like, his dad. I don't want to sign your autograph right now. I'll sign it after I'm done eating. It's already getting there. That's one of the things I talk about with you all the time, was going to the after parties.
Yes.
I remember one we went to where they had, you being pissed off because they had your name on the flyer, like trying to get people to come. And then they wanted to give us a big ass bill. It was like, motherfucker.
Yeah.
That shit was comedy. Because we saw that same girl. We kept seeing that same chick all week. That looked like Patrick Ewing, remember?
Which?
All these parties, I always tell people these stories because, like, I will always be, like, the only white dude. And I was always torn between, like, do I just, like, hold on to your arm the whole time? or do I stand here and act like security? I always felt like I was half security. At those parties.
A lot of my friends like that. Like, man, like, I go out with you, bro. I feel like I can just, stand next to you, and I don't know what to do. I'm like, but just chill.
Yeah, yeah. And it was always chill, but, like, I was always worried, you know, because everybody there thinks you have a bunch of money on you or something. Like,
exactly.
Everybody, and so I always had my head on a swivel. Not that I could have done shit. I just would have done my best, but, like, just looking around, I was always just watching. I was always, like, and that's, you never had, like, a chain on. You never had any.
Right.
You know, you never were flashing anything. I mean, you always had, like, your earrings, but, I mean, that's going to be a lot of work.
Yeah.
Like a chain or something. Somebody can just run by, snatch the chain, take off, you know, like, shit like that. So I was always, but I remember that one time. I remember a party in Kansas City. And the first thing you did, because the DJ kept, Tony Rock's in the building. Tony Rock's in the building, y'all. Blah, blah. And he went up and told him, say, Bill Blanks. So he said, yeah, give it up for Bill Blanks. Bill Blanks in the building. Nobody knows who the fuck I am at all. I'm just nodding. And then another white dude walks in. And I looked at you and was like, the fuck's this dude doing?
He's like, on your turf.
Like, this dude came in here. I'm the fucking white dude. What are you doing here? Like, but he was trying. He came in there wearing fucking FUBU and shit.
Like shades on indoors.
Yeah, he was trying really hard.
FUBU sweatsuit and stuff like that. I'm like, nah, bro.
Yeah. That was like the, like, tech. There had something to do with Tech Nine. Wherever we were, I remember.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
It was his birthday,
like,
I think.
Like a Tech Nine birthday party or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn, I remember that. Yeah.
But that dude's like, I don't think I've ever even heard a Tech Nine song. People around here talking about him all the time.
He came. Were you there when he came to the improv the time I was there?
I think he might have been there and I didn't know it. Because I just remember we went to his birthday party after the show.
Okay.
It was basically over.
I did the improv one year in Kansas City, and he was at the show. He was in the room, and they brought him to the green room to say hi after the show.
Oh, got you. Yeah, no, like, I wasn't there then.
He was like, man, you're super talented, bro. And I'm like, oh, shit, this is Tech Nine, like the most famous unknown rapper in the world.
For real. Like, and he's like in with metal dudes and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
he's big. He's big, too.
He's, like, friends with Slipknot, I guess, and, like, they do all kinds of nutty ass shit. Your brother Jordan was here not too long ago. I didn't get a chance to go. I wanted to go out and see him, but I didn't get a chance to. Yeah, he was in.
We did a
the small club.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. What's the other club called?
Teehees.
Teenies, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
Teehees. We did a show. We did a show together Monday night. We did a. You know, the Netflix is a joke festival is going on this week.
Yeah, that's like a big deal now. Like that's probably replacing Just for Laughs, don't you think?
Absolutely. The way the city looks right now, it was like everywhere you go, comics all everywhere. Comic.
Yeah.
Shows every night, every venue. It's amazing, man. Just to see everybody running around and everybody.
Oh yeah, when I'm watching it, nothing makes me feel more inadequate than looking at the fucking crowds.
Yeah, you got you should come out next year.
All these dudes, I know. Well, what do you do? You just go hang out? Like, are people out? There's comics that just come out and hang out. Like, most of them are doing shows, aren't they?
No, it's like JFL. Some comics just come to JFL and hang out because it's what's going on. But if you're coming out, I mean, I'll make sure I put a show together and put you on it.
Yeah, well, maybe that's what we'll do then for sure. Remember, I was gonna do the Apollo. We were talking about that.
Yes.
You scared me out of it. You talked me out of it. You were trying to talk me out of it, but you talked me out of it. I feel like you were, maybe. Were you trying
No. I would love to see you fucking crush the Apollo.
I remember you being like, it's not a comedy audience, though. I was like, I thought I would be okay. I thought I'd be all right.
But that's the thing I tell people. It's like, listen, man, it's an audience of people that come to not like you.
Yeah.
So you have to win them over. A comedy club audience is people that like comedy.
Right.
They're like, hey, I know what's going on. I'm a fan of this. I come to see it all the time. I'm very happy to be here. Let's, give this guy a shot. Apollo's like, yeah, motherfucker, come on. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's hard to make a person laugh. And they're like, just, make me laugh, man.
It's kind of like the Cleveland Improv.
Ooh. That could go either way real fast.
I would call the Cleveland Improv. Well, now it's a Funny Bone. They've changed all those Funny Bones now. But as far as the chain, the Funny Bone Improv chain, I would have called Cleveland the toughest. That would have been the toughest. I mean, I had great sets there. But that room, dude, there was a fucking armed police officer roaming around. Like,
yeah, that's a pretty tough one.
One of my favorite things that happened there, I was opening for Shang. Is it Shang?
Shang?
Yeah, right? Yeah. Shang?
With the hat on?
Shang Forbes,
yeah.
I didn't mean any disrespect. I was just trying to remember. I was opening for him. And I mean, for the longest time, Funny Bones Improvs, I'm the only white guy there at a lot of the shows. And there was a white gay couple in the front, the very front table. And they had a backpack sitting there with them. And everybody was flipping the fuck out that they had a bag. And like, I go up on stage, they didn't do anything about it while the MC was on.
Right.
They waited to go talk to him until the MC brought me up. So I walk up on stage to the cops fucking talking to these dudes, looking at their bag and shit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's like, what the fuck? And it worked out great because I was like, this has got to be the greatest thing in the world. Like, we're in this room full of black people and the white people are the ones the cops are talking to. How fucking cool is that? So I won, I won them over and had a great set, but like,
you should have said, these two guys are so gay. You heard the phrase, eat a bag of dicks. They actually have the bag.
Hindsight's 2020.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is the bag of dicks.
I would have also been presumptuous to say they were gay. I just assumed.
I thought it was like blatantly obvious.
I mean, I felt like it was, but you can be wrong.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I've had a comic. We were in St. Louis. Have you met Joe Fox?
No.
Okay, Joe Fox was my feature that night, that weekend. And a couple in the front row, black female, twisty dreads, like coming down, kind of, around her face.
Mm-hmm.
Person next to her, bigger, stocky, same color twisty dreads coming down. No, hers were tied up. and his were coming down over his face. And Joe Fox says, so how long you guys been together? And the girl's like, you know, 3 years. And he goes, okay, so, okay, lesbian couple, how, you know, that's cool. And the dude goes, what the fuck you say? And does this, and does this, and like, listen, dreads up. And it was a guy. And he, it was St. Louis. He was hot. Yo, I'm gonna fuck you up, man. And I'm backstage like, oh God, I gotta fight this dude. I gotta go out here and fight this dude.
Did he recover?
And no, Joe Fox is wrapping his setup. He did not recover. So I come out, I'm like, just bring me up, man. And he brings me on. I go, okay, all right, everybody calm down. I'm calm down. I'm like, where's the guy that he thought was gay? I knew exactly where he was. I go, where's the guy at? Everybody's like, right there. I'm like, oh, you? I'm like, you do look like a bitch. The room exploded. Exploded. He's like, come on, Rock. Yo, Rock, come on, man. Come on. I was like, calm down, bro. I'm fucking with you, man. I said, because I was back there the whole time you was looking at Joe Fox, talking to Joe Fox, thinking like, I don't know if me and Joe could beat your ass. Together, I don't even know if we could beat your ass. Yeah. So I was like, I'm going to keep you laughing rather than have to fight you tonight. And right. Everybody leaving the show that night was like, man, that was incredible.
Yeah, everybody's endeared to you.
But you're right. You can be wrong.
Oh, yeah. But see, that's the thing, though. When you're... Comedy has an abrasiveness to it. Like, if you can be more abrasive, you end up being the tougher guy in the end. It's almost like talking your way out of a fight, not being like, hey, I don't want to fight you. Just they think that you're going to whoop their ass. Like, you talked enough shit that you scared them. Like, it's almost like that. Like,
or if you didn't talk shit, they talking the whole time, you like this. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, do it then. Yeah, let's go. Yeah. They're like, 100%. Oh shit, this guy's like, he's too calm to not be able to whip my ass.
When you're fucking calling their bluff,
basically. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I heard you. Let's go. Yeah. Okay.
I had it happen to me in Kansas City, but I was opening for Michael Blackson. And I was doing, do you remember the joke I used to do about Fantasia not being able to read?
Yes.
I did that joke. And this dude in the crowd got pissed and was just yelling shit, telling me I was racist and shit, because he was like you can't talk about black people when you're white. And I was like this is my show, bitch. I'll talk about whoever the fuck I want. And the place just went, like, they were all on my side.
Yeah.
He was like, he said something, he goes, I bet she's got more money than your bitch ass. And I was like, she does have more money, but I can endorse my own checks. And then that dude got kicked out, and he was just like, and his girl stayed.
Oh, that's
the rest of the show. I love those shows.
Yeah. I love those shows when the guy starts to argue and his girl's laughing, and it's like, bro, now you got to drive home with her, and she's happy, and you could be pissed off.
Oh my God! And he's like, and that's what he said, because I didn't pay to see that. She's like, no, you paid to see Michael Blackson. Now you're not. Wow. And then his girl, and he said he was going to be waiting for me in the parking lot. I was like, you ain't even going to remember this by the time the show's over.
Nice. Good one.
Know why you're mad anymore. Like, shut the fuck up.
Good one.
But it's like, man, I mean, how many rooms have you been in that weren't clubs that shit like that happened? And like, you literally got to, like, you're actually afraid some shit's gonna pop off.
Oh yeah. Yeah. A lot, like, I think that's like unfortunately, that's a rite of passage when you start out, because you just want to be on stage. You know that the mic, getting a mic in your hand is like the most important thing. So if I gotta go to this restaurant or this Mexican restaurant or this hookah spot to do comedy, I will. And they aren't people, again, they aren't people that are like, we're fans of comedy. We come to see this. They're just like, we here and this happens to be going on. So we don't have to really respect it and give it the same courtesy that you would in a comedy club.
And there's no security.
And it's like, security's like, I don't give a fuck. Security's like, hey, man, I'm here till 7. I don't give a fuck.
If there is any.
Or they're like, I don't know this fucking guy. Like, we know famous comedians. We don't know this guy.
Yeah.
So,
okay, like in L.A., it's probably double bad.
Yeah, it's everybody has a comedy night somewhere in L.A. Yeah.
At what point do you think that's detrimental?
Like, it's detrimental, yes.
Like, but I mean, at what point, for, you know, all those open mics are good for cutting your teeth. Like, I found, like, right now, the indie room that your brother just did.
Yeah.
Like, they do an open mic every week, a couple of different ones. And
it's almost always mostly comics in the crowd. And like, I think I've done three or four of them, and three out of the four, I just ate a dick the whole five.
You know what's, you know what's detrimental about them in Los Angeles is that the comics that can't get up and aren't regulars at comedy clubs, they frequent those rooms.
Right.
So they're technically getting stage time, but you're not a regular at a comedy club. You're not passed. And then that turns into, I don't fucking do these rooms. I don't do the Laugh Factory. They don't fuck with my, like, bro, you're not doing yourself a service by not trying your hardest to get in there. That's where your 100%. Life is in there.
But like, where in your career do you, at what point do you think, like I said, I've done like three or four of these open mics, and it's not them. They're not the reason that I don't do well. I don't do well on purpose. Like, I'm up there basically to eat it. Like, I mean, I don't set out for that, but I know that's where we're at. I'm just going up there with ideas and seeing what happens. But I'm also not getting a good gauge of anything.
Right.
Like, in rooms like that, you can't just go up with a premise because there's no freedom.
Yeah.
Like, no trust. Nobody trusts you.
Right.
So, like, if you're not up there with prepared bits, like, it's just kind of, hey, what's next? And so, like, where do you think in your career is the moment where it's like you don't have to do that, or it's detrimental for you to do that? Like, you can't tailor your act to that audience. You got to tailor it to the total strangers.
Yeah. So when I started out in New York, there's so many comedy clubs in New York, right? You don't have to do those rooms. You can, it was at the time, I think there was 12 comedy clubs in New York. So for me to do one of those rooms was just, you know, $50. Somebody give me $50 to go up.
Giving you money to do their room.
Right. So
Tony Rock did their room.
Right. But but I was past it. I was a regular at most of the comedy clubs in New York. Once I got past it, every comedy club in New York, it was years before I went in another room like that. And when I went back, I was Tony Rock. So it was like, oh shit, Tony Rock came by. You know what I mean? So I kind of got to dodge that bullet by not being the guy that was like trying to build my stand-up, resume in those rooms.
Well, there's still those people. There's still those people that are like fuck the funny bone type of people.
Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. Those guys are out here.
It's like, don't you understand? That's the major leagues.
Exactly. Like,
that's where you're trying to be.
Right.
Like, it's great that you can do all these shows and. You know, the stage time wasn't that prevalent back when I started like it is now for these guys. And that's great. I'm glad they have it. But nobody's getting paid.
Is there a bigger scene out there now?
Yeah, there's a lot of comics. Like, well, I don't know how to explain it. Like, there's a lot of people doing comedy now.
Right.
There's Teehees has two nights a week that they have, like, they have a Wednesday like open mic where it'll be like 30 people sometimes, you know.
Oh wow!
And then they have a Thursday that's more like a showcase. And the crowds aren't, you know, it's not a very big place, but they're trying to expand too. I think they're buying another building and they're trying to get a little bigger or whatever. I do like what they're doing because they're fostering a creative environment.
Right.
Like, a lot of the reasons. Like the amateur comics and stuff like that will say like fuck the funny bone. It's because the funny bone isn't doing stuff like that. The funny bone doesn't just allow anybody on their stage that says they're a comedian. Yeah. But they don't understand that's something to aspire to. Like you want to work at the place that gives you a check every time.
Yeah. Like Plus, sometimes they don't understand. Like, yo, that's a business. Like the funny bone's a business.
Exactly.
They have to put asses in seats and get the two drink minimum in the door, to, you know, to make money.
Right.
So you can't do that. Then not that they don't like you. It's not, don't take it so personal. It's like, this is a business they're running.
100%. They don't understand like that. They just how much money it costs just to open the doors and turn the lights.
Right.
On.
Right.
Then you got staff to pay and all that. Like a place like Teehees, all they've got is a bartender. There's no server. There's no security. There's no, you know what I mean? Like, people walk up to the bar to get their drinks. You know, there's no overhead happening. And that's why they're able to do that kind of stuff. And so it's great. And I love it. And they do all these theme shows, like fun shows, you know, like a lot of stuff you'll see in LA where they do kind of themes or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's all fun stuff, but they don't like, you know, like that's not a,
like, there aren't a lot of people overall that like kind of culture that really like me. Like, they, I think a lot of them think I'm a dick, but it's good. Well, like, back, you know, for, I mean, I've been doing this 20, almost 25 years now. So, like, you know, a lot of those guys, it was always, I think they have them in New York too. Everybody calls them scenists.
No, what's that? Like,
everybody's about the scene.
You know, oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
The scene,
yeah.
The scene. Like, all those guys that were all about the scene, well, it's because they weren't going to make the sacrifices. They weren't going to go on the road. They weren't. They just want to put it, make a cool poster and get a bunch of people in Des Moines to go to their show that they do every once in a while. You know, they're not right. Like, they don't know what it's like to have to eat off of this. And so I used to,
yes,
when they,
yes,
would, they would, yeah, they would badmouth the Funny Bone and shit like that. And I'd snap on, you know, they make their Facebook page, you know, Des Moines comedy scene, but they don't treat me like I'm a part of it. Right. It's like, well, yeah, those of us that did this for a living ever, that's who you should be holding up. Like, nobody has to kiss my ass. I don't want anybody to kiss my ass or anything like that. But, like, I mean, you guys, when you disrespect the one club that can give you a check, like, that's how I paid my child support for fucking 15 years, was that club. Like, your fucking Java Joe's comedy night ain't doing that. Like, why am I a dick? Because I'm not going to your open mic all the time. And if I do go, I might do a set and then leave. And then I'm a dick because I didn't watch people. Like, I didn't stay to be a part of the audience, yeah, or whatever. It's like,
you can't, you know, win, man. You got to do your thing. Just, you know.
It's that imposter syndrome. It's always there. I always feel like a fraud. It's hard to
know. You damn. You're solidified, man.
Where
you're a hashtag Tony Rock approved. I put that on social media sometimes.
Yeah, I remember that's in my I think it's on my website. I just redid everything, which I need to talk to you about, because you just did a special that, yes, you financed it yourself, right?
Yes.
How arduous was that process,
man? Listen, so couldn't get the deal, you know, thought I would hold out for the deal and the deal would materialize, and it didn't. And I'm talking, like, this is over the course of years, okay? So I've had managers come and go, and their whole, you know, bargaining shit was, I can get the special done. So I would go with, you know, work with this guy, years in, no special, work with this guy, years in, no special. And there's two comics out here that I spoke to. And they were like, you got to just do it yourself, man. Like, you have the material, bro. You got the goods, you know, you can do this. And people need to see you more, like, in other places that haven't seen you. I know you got repeat business on the road. Your shows are sold out. And people are like, hey, this is my fifth time seeing you, my fourth time seeing you. But where are the new people? And that's how you reach them with the special. So I took all the, like, damn near all the money out of my bank account. I circled a date on the calendar. I said, this is the date. Sticking to it, not moving off of it. Let's go. Sam Tripoli, you know Sam Tripoli?
I do.
Sam Tripoli, good friend of mine. We did Montreal together. We was in the same graduating class with the same New Faces class. Trip has some partners that he works with. Like, hey, they would love to partner with you and help you make this thing happen. So hired them, got the venue, redesigned the stage, and let me redesign the stage, put new lights in. We did everything, A to Z. Two shows, two sold out shows, shot the special, edited it, let management see it. They loved it. Let agency see it. They loved it. They said, my agent said he was going to shop it, but JFL had just started. I'm going to take it to JFL, see what happens. No deal. Nobody wanted it. Nobody bit. Nobody jumped out the window for it. Okay. Went the other route, streaming platforms, submitted it. They accepted it. It's on six or seven streaming platforms. Six or seven streaming platforms accept it. And then I get the call, hey, they want to buy it now.
But it's already out there.
No. So now I'm okay, we got to go back and make sure it doesn't go up, because they got to, you know, and yeah, we do that. We go back and forth with that contract. And The special should be everywhere very shortly. Then, in the meantime, while I'm doing all of this, I've learned so much about the process since the first special. I'm like, hey, let's do another one. So we shot a half hour. I was on the road in Raleigh, and I like the Raleigh Club because they have that LED screen behind you, so you can put whatever you want behind you. So I'm like, here's my logo. I want it on the screen when I come out. I want the music. This is what I want. Hired a camera crew. We shot a half hour in Raleigh. So that'll be up. I'm going to hold that for a little bit until this first one drops, and then drop that maybe like a month right after. Just when the heat is going from the first one. Damn, he dropped another one. And all of them, both of them, 100% my money.
Nice. So you gambled on yourself from the jump. It's not like it's not the first time.
Right. Yeah.
But how, I mean, this is a mental health podcast. Like, how does that fuck with you? Like, you emptied your bank account.
This is the thing. When my management called me and said, there's potential for a deal here. And my agent's on the phone. We all on a conference call. And I'm like, I got to think about it. And he tells me the number. And I'm like, I still got to think about it. And they thought I was going to be like, hell yeah, let's just do it because of the number they were talking. And I'm like, I'll call you guys later. Like, do you need something I answer by today or tomorrow? No, as soon as you can would be, we appreciate it. But I got to think about it. I hang up the phone and then my manager calls me like, what's going on? Like, where are you? And I said, bro, and this is mental health right here. This is definitely in that space that we're talking about right now. So I go, hey, man, I just need a second to just process all of this because I fucking begged everybody on that fucking phone call for help with the special and nobody fucking helped. Nobody, I did this shit myself. And now there's a deal to be made. And you guys are like, hey, this is a great opportunity. Well, where the fuck was the great opportunity before I had to do all of this? Mm-hmm. And I said, yo, and I'm not mad. I'm not mad at you guys. I'm kind of disappointed that it had to get to this point. But one, yes, why am I paying you this? But I said, to be honest with you guys got to let me come down off of my anger before I can really make a real thoughtful decision on this. Because I'm sitting here right now like, what the fuck? I did all this work and nobody helped me. And now they're like, hey, great idea. Great. We got a phone call. We got a deal. We?
Yeah. What's this wee shit?
So I had to literally sit like for 2 days. I called my sister. I called a couple of the comedy friends. It was like, I'm going to tell you where my headspace is. And then you guys tell me. And they're like, listen, man, this is an opportunity for the special to get seen. The ultimate goal is for everybody to see it. Regardless of if you recoup the money you spent on it or not, you're going to get a little bit of money back. If you're going to get what you spent on it, even better. But it's going to be seen. You ever see the movie Bugsy?
Is that Warren Beatty?
Warren Beatty, Annette Bening.
Yeah. I don't remember it enough.
But okay, one of my absolute favorite movies of all time.
Nice. I'm a
watcher. And he's trying. You know, he plays a Benny Siegel trying to get the flamingo made, built.
Okay.
And he invests so much money, and he takes so much money from mob bosses, and takes money from people, and he sells shares that aren't there anymore. And Maya Lansky says to him, "Hey, Benny, you're going to end up with nothing on this deal. At the end of the day, you're going to end up with nothing. You owe everybody. You can't possibly pay all this money back. You're going to end up with nothing on this deal." And he turns and looks at him dead in the eyes and goes, "But the flamingo will be built. That's not nothing."
Right.
And I'm like, that shit hit me. Every time I see that, I'm like, that's what the fuck I'm talking about. Like that, but the flamingo will be built. And that's not nothing. If I get nothing on the back end, the thing that I built will live forever.
I love that you said that because, and when we get off air, I want to talk to you about it. That's where I'm at. Like, I have a project and.
Wait, can we put a pin in that right there and take a Revelton break because I could pee?
Bring
up the sponsor.
Yeah, just we can run it one more time, let him pee, but we're going to wrap it up soon anyway.
Okay, bet.
But go ahead. Throw another commercial on, Andrew. Why not?
Why take the best corn in the world and make it into fuel when you could make it into whiskey? That's the question that launched Revelton, Iowa's most visible and fastest growing distillery. Owners Rob and Christy Taylor embrace the grain-to-glass philosophy, sourcing ingredients locally and overseeing on-premises production and bottling at their facility in Osceola. One sip, and you'll agree that Revelton's handcrafted whiskeys, gins, and vodkas are the best you've ever tasted. And with the launch of their rye whiskey, made with 100% Iowa-grown rye and corn, and their new bourbon coming soon, there's more Revelton to love than ever. Iowa's own Revelton Distillery. ReveltonDistillery.com.
Perfect timing. Look at that.
Oh my God. This dude's prostate is healthy.
I had a doctor's appointment today, by the way, and he said, he's like, you know, you did all the EKG and blood work and all that stuff. And like, he's like, so everything's like, you know, you're working out, you're a healthy guy. You have any trouble urinating? Any problems there? I'm like, no, I didn't know that was a problem. Like, he's like, yeah, some people have problems urinating. I'm like, oh, I didn't.
Oh, no. Yeah. I was at the doctor today as well, because when I hurt my back, I went to the emergency room, and this is what's bananas. Like, I have all my medical shit in my phone, right? Like, so when they put something in the computer at the doctor's office or anything, it comes to my phone. I see all that shit.
Nice.
So I got to the emergency room, and within an hour, they got me back and got x-rays and everything, because I would have sworn I broke a vertebrae. I broke something when this happened. Like, I was nauseous. The pain was so bad. I couldn't move. So they got me x-rayed really quickly. Well, then the x-ray results come to my phone while I'm in the waiting room. And it says no breaks or fractures in the x-ray. So now I'm just waiting on the doctor. I already know no breakthrough. 6 hours go by. I still haven't seen the doctor.
Oh, shit.
So I just left. I was like, they're just going to tell me to leave. Anyway, like, nothing's broken. They're not going to, like, do an MRI all of a sudden. I'm not shitting myself.
6 hours? No explanation?
They were just that busy. Like, basically, once they x-rayed me and saw no breaks or anything, I wasn't high on the priority.
Right.
As people are coming in with real trauma, like ambulances and stuff like that, that's what's filling the place up. I did learn something, though, which may come in handy as my health deteriorates in my older age. If you fucking make some noise, they will take care of you. If you are in the waiting room, this chick comes, oh my God, this bitch comes in, the ambulance brings her in, and she's laid out, and she had nothing on but fucking... she had like a Mike Tyson towel, except it was like a blanket.
Yeah.
It was like a whole blanket with a hole in the middle and nothing under it and some like Adidas pants, right? And they're getting her, she's like, you're getting her off the stretcher. She's like, and just every time they try to move her, Me and my dad are watching, and they're bringing her over to a chair to try to sit her in a chair. And she just falls out like a toddler throwing a fit, like her arms up, you know, like you're holding the toddler's hand and they go dead weight. And so you're just like trying to lift them up by their hand. Like, this bitch is fucking, whole fucking titty out just right here, like not giving a fuck. Just, they finally take her back. She's gone for 4 hours.
Wow.
And then I shit you not, I'm in a wheelchair. I was there so long, my phone was going dead. They had these charger stations like across the way. So I wheel my phone over there to charge it. She comes walking out like nothing is wrong. Just goes and sits in a chair. I don't know what she was waiting for, but she was perfectly fine. I go wheeling by and she goes, "You got some nice legs." I was like, what? I just wanted to fucking punch her. I was like, bitch, I've been sitting here for 5 fucking hours. All I had to do was scream and yell.
Been sitting here so long, my nice legs don't work.
Yeah, they didn't either. It was fucking horrible. But yeah, so I went to the doctor today, and my A1C is under, 5.8, under 6, so that's great. And like,
yeah, they said my blood pressure was beautiful. He's like, oh, check your everything, blood pressure. Oh, it's beautiful. I'm like, okay, good.
Yeah, I don't know, man. You're always gonna look like you're 25. I'm fairly certain. Because I don't think I look at I was looking at a picture of us together in like 2013. Yeah, that's 11 years ago in Orlando. It's 2013.
Damn, man.
like I have no gray. I'm all skinny. Of course, at that time I was separated from the wife and going through all that shit, so I wasn't eating. And I was like, but it's just weird. And see, you look the exact same. I look old as fuck now.
No, I got some grays in here.
Yeah, you get, but are you doing any of the diet? Are you gonna diet? Would you diet?
I don't know. This is what I think about every once in a while. Like, cause I really enjoyed having that black goatee. So I'm like, maybe I could just put a little something on it. And but if it looks fake, then I don't know.
Yeah, that's what's hard. Cause you got to get it long enough.
But then I see like, you know, like guys on TV, like black actors on TV. I'm like, how the fuck did they do that? Like I know that guy's older than me. How did he do that? Like, what's the thing you're using, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. But I've thought about it, too. Like,
so if you ever see it, everybody watching, if you ever see the black goatee, just shut up. You know what happened.
Have it fucking dripping. Looks like shoe polish. Just
the dripping Rudy, down your neck. Rudy Giuliani just coming down like.
Man. All right. Well, we should probably wrap this up. We try to keep it at an hour. We're at an hour 20.
Oh, okay.
But I definitely can't thank you enough for coming on, brother. And I hope that I get to see you soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's been.
And just so you, we'll touch on it before I go. Like, because you said this was the mental health aspect of the show. Like, I'll be brief. So,
well, we got time. Don't worry.
I called my brother one day, and I'm like, I was, long story short, I'm in a hotel one night in New York City. I'm laying in a hotel. I'm looking up at the Empire State Building. Of all views to have, I had the most incredible view. I'm looking up at the Empire State Building. It's royal blue because I think it was opening night for the Mets. So they always change the color of the Empire State Building. The top is royal blue, my favorite color. Looking up at the Empire State Building. Thinking about family, friends, all type of stuff. I have a breakthrough. I'm just like, damn, because I was home for a couple of days seeing family and friends, and a couple of people that I had fallen out with and wasn't talking to, and all that, you know. And I'm like, one particular relationship in particular, I'm like, okay, that was like 90 to 90. You've been holding on to that shit for damn near 25 years. Like, bro, you gotta let that shit go. And I realized, like, right there in the moment, I was like, you know, I'm Tony Rock. You know who I am. Like KD said, yo, I'm KD. Y'all know who I am. I'm Tony Rock. You know who I am. I've had great days in my entire life. I've had incredible days in my life. But not as incredible as they could have been, because every day I would wake up and grab that bag of shit and walk into the new day. You know what I mean? So you can't do that. Whoever's watching, you can't do that. You got to clean slate every day. You know what I'm saying?
100%. Like, it's a great way, you know, I don't know, just your maturity level, how that changes.
Yeah. Like, yes.
You know, now that you have a son, like you were talking about with the managers and everything and the agents and that anger and wanting to come down from the anger before you made the decision. Like, you know, 15 years ago, you might've just made that decision in anger, you know?
15 years ago, I'd be like, fuck y'all, I'm not doing that shit because y'all should have just. And that would have ruined the opportunity for myself. So now you gotta take your ego out of it sometimes. Like, look at the business aspect of it. I have a cousin that lives in Dallas, Texas. We had fell out years ago over some money that he cost me. I never got it back. Every time I saw his parents, they would promise me my money back, and I never got it back. And that's neither here nor there now. And we talked, and we, you know, kind of, you know, buried the hatchet, so to speak. And then he called his sister the next day and said, hey, I saw Tony, cousin Tony's in town. And I went to a show and he was great. And we hung out and went to dinner afterwards. And he said, I don't know what it is about him, man, but he has a calmness about him that was like, it was impressive how calm he was. And I said, hey, man, it's the baby. I'm not trying to fight nobody. I'm not trying to yell in the street and argue with no girl, none of that. Yo, I got my baby to get home to at the end of the day. And when I'm on the road, even more so, because I got to get back to him in another state.
Yeah.
So everything is like, hey, man, it's okay. It's fine. Yeah. The money, I never got the money back. Don't worry about it. I've made it back 100 times since then.
Yeah, it's so far in the rear view.
Yeah, it's like, bro, I'm not going to wake up tomorrow and that shit will not be a thought of mine tomorrow.
Well, I was just telling, this is what I tell my son, because, you know, my son's a professional wrestler now.
Right.
So
he's doing all this beginning stage shit that's the same as like we were doing the open mics and all that. Like,
yeah,
he's doing all this indie wrestling and stuff. And I try to tell him, because as long as I've been in comedy, I've got a lot of friends that have elevated and elevated and elevated, you know, but only so many of them are still answering my text messages. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you're one of them, Brad Williams, Ian Bagg, you know, those guys,
right.
You know, I can always count on getting an answer, you know? And what I told my son was like, when it's all said and done, it's going to be the relationships that matter the most.
Right.
So no matter where you're at right now, just cherish it, do what you can to maintain these relationships. Cause
and also, can I piggyback on that? Tell your son, and you know this, enjoy this part of it. Enjoy this part of it, the start out part, because once it gets to the where you envision it to be, then it's business.
Mm-hmm.
And you won't have the time to just sit with a friend and talk
100%.
About whatever, or have a drink and just sit outside and chill. Now it's like, I have to be here at this time. I have to do this at this time. These people are calling me. These people are coming over. Then once the business takes over, it comes into it, it plays a bigger part. The fun of it diminishes a little bit.
Yeah.
That's why you have to, and that's why you have to nurture the relationships. Like you and I could be as busy as, you know, I could be on TV tomorrow shooting all day. Yeah. But if you text me, I'm like, okay, this is a fun part from the beginning that I still get to hold on to.
100%.
The business can't fuck this up right here. You know what I'm saying?
Right. 100%.
So, like, I will, that's why I always cherish those friendships, and I always make sure I try to, you know, nurture them and keep them going. Like, you send a text and I'm like, Blanky, love you, man. I got to call you back.
Yeah.
Like, but I know that, like, that's from when it was fun.
Yeah.
You know, comics in New York this weekend has been so much fun because I've seen so many comics from when I started in New York. I'm at clubs and it's like, oh my God, yo, what's up?
Yeah.
And it's like, I just remember how much fun it used to be.
Oh yeah. Well, and then like, and see, that's a change I've noticed in you is 13 years ago, you wouldn't have told me you loved me. You would have said, that's fucking gay. And now, and now you're like, love you, Blanky. In fact, the night of the slap, I hadn't even seen it yet. I hadn't even seen it yet. I just knew it happened.
Yeah.
All I knew was on Facebook, so these people said some shit. I hadn't even watched it, didn't know shit. I sent you a text. I was like, was I the first one to text you? Probably not. Like, I mean,
I don't remember.
It wasn't exactly instantaneous, but like, I just remember I texted you. It was like, I'll get on the next plane. You want to handle business?
Yeah, I remember that. Yes, yes, yes.
Because I fucking hated Will Smith before that. I didn't give a fuck.
Man, oh man, that was a wild fucking night in the Rock household.
I bet it was. But I mean, was everybody just on the phone? Was there like a group chat with all 10?
No. So I don't watch the Oscars every year.
Yeah,
I don't watch,
me neither. Yeah.
I'm not doing stuff. I'm running around like, oh shit, that's tonight. I don't know. So I think the whole world saw it before me. I saw it maybe 35, 40 minutes after it happened. People were texting me. My phone's going crazy. And you know, when your phone's going crazy, somebody's shot. Somebody's in jail. Somebody just passed. So I'm like, damn, I don't even want to answer the phone. And then Jordan calls. And I'm like, okay, I got to answer the phone for my baby brother.
Yeah.
Because he needs me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I answer the phone. I'm like, what's up? And he's like, was that shit real? I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? He's like, you didn't see that shit. And he sends me the link. So the whole world's talking about it already. I'm in the house just eating Cheez-Its. Like, wait, what happened? And then once I saw it, I was like, okay. And then maybe 20, 30 minutes later, you text me.
Yeah. I would have too. I didn't give a fuck. Like, I'll just make a name for myself for slapping Will Smith. My dude would probably kill me. He probably, I don't even know. How tall is he? 6'2"?
Pretty tall.
And see, that's what pissed me off about it.
Like my brother said, he's significantly bigger. He played Muhammad Ali and I played a crackhead in New Jack City.
Yeah, 100%. And see, that's why I did see your brother at his face. Like everybody said he was a bitch. They just called him a bitch. And that's 100% how I felt. I can't stand. It's like I told everybody, if that was The Rock and not Chris Rock,
he wouldn't have said shit. Yeah. He would have just sat there. Yeah. Yep. And that's the difference between me and him. If I was mad, I would have slapped The Rock. I'd have been like, all right, I'm going to get killed by The Rock tonight, but I'm going to fucking slap him.
Right.
And that's what would have happened. I would have been like, okay, Will Smith's going to whoop my ass tonight, but I'm getting one lick in.
No, we would have got some. We would have got some punches in. Don't you worry about that. For sure,
that's what I love about what like Chappelle said about it. He was like, my problem was he got to enjoy the rest of his night.
Yeah, I love that line. Yeah, I don't know what I would have did, but I know what he. I don't know what I would have did, but I know what he would have done.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I was always thinking, and it was funny because we've all heard stories about people coming up on stage.
Mm-hmm.
I've had somebody come close, but not quite. Cause I don't look like that dude. Like I at least look like I'm going to put up some resistance.
Yeah.
Like, usually somebody's not, but the thing about the Oscars, like I saw his initial reaction. He cupped his fist. Like as soon as he got slapped, he came up kind of like,
yep.
And you could see in his body language that, oh, I can't do that right now. Like, I totally saw it. Like, I saw his fist clench, and I saw his arm move. Like, he was ready. He was about to defend himself and then realized he couldn't.
Because our parents have always taught us you don't fight in front of white people. True words have never been spoken.
That fucking hurt. That hurt my back. Oh fuck! So, never fight in front of white people. And the most dangerous man on the basketball court is the wide open white boy.
Wide open white boy, danger.
that's probably the text I send you the most.
Yes,
wide open white boy text.
Yes. Yo, this whole women's basketball season. I thought about you a lot because I watched a lot of Iowa games, and I'm like, I know Blanky somewhere just so happy right now. I watched the whole tournament. I watched games. I'm like, I know my man Blanky is like just like hell yeah right now.
Well, and I remember you texted me when Iowa beat Michigan, when Michigan was undefeated, and Iowa beat them by a field goal. I was in Toledo watching the game with a bunch of Michigan fans. I was at the Toledo Funny Bone out in the bar with people with Michigan gear on. And so I'm yelling for Iowa the whole time. And I remember you sent me a text just like, somebody's happy. As soon as they hit that field goal, you're using the text me. But yeah, I was. And I found myself, oh man, God, I need to stop. Here's a great thing about, like, if you want to talk about mental health, I've been fighting with people about Caitlin Clark for like 2 months. Like,
geez. I saw that. I saw you and I think it was Daniel Dugal going back and forth on Facebook.
Oh, so you know,
Daniel. I wanted to jump in so bad, but I have made it my business to just not go back and forth with people. When I read your initial statement, and I'll go,
yeah,
oh, this guy he doesn't know what he's talking about. So I'm not going to go back and forth with a person that doesn't know what they're talking about.
And see, I've stopped. Now he's like doing something like, I swear to God, almost every day.
Yeah,
there's some kind of
you said something like, I'm happy about what this does for basketball. And he's like, oh, cause she white. I'm like, I'm not even getting in
there. Yeah, well, it was more like I was basically trying to say, like most of the haters that I've seen, that's been the theme.
Right.
She's only getting this because she's white. And it's like, dude, her stats are so fucking bananas. Like, she is so far above everyone else statistically. Like when they show the little dot metrics or whatever.
Yeah.
Like she's up here in like the corner, and the closest thing to her is like down here somewhere.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, this is just complete and total bananas. And so I'm like, I will have so much more respect for you if you will just tell me you're mad that she's white. Just come out and say you're mad that she's white, because that is literally everything I see. Yeah. And that's all, it always gets prefaced with, I love her game, but. It's like, dude, it doesn't make you less of a hater because you preface it with something else. Like,
and that's why I read those and I go, you know what? Nope, not falling that rabbit hole. Nope.
Yeah. Well, the good thing though, and see with Daniel and most of, well, you, a lot of my friends, I can have those conversations because everybody knows where my heart is.
Right.
Where it's hard is when it gets out there to people you don't know. And that's one thing I learned in comedy very well, very early when it came to
when I started doing a lot of shows with you and a lot of those, there's that little niche where they want white guys to open at black shows all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't know where that came from. I know you never wanted it on purpose, but like there's guys like Ari Spears always wanted a white guy. Cheryl Underwood would ask for a white guy. And that's how I got to where they knew I could do it, was I opened for Cheryl Underwood. That was the first thing. But what I learned about it was none of these people know me. Right. They don't know. Like, I made the mistake at one point very early because I grew up watching Def Comedy Jam. And I was like, I want to be the white guy on a Def Comedy Jam show so bad. Like, and I was like, I'll kill it. Like, I know everybody will love me and blah, blah, blah. Well, I made the mistake of acting like I was around my high school friends or something that all know right. me. Well, when these people don't know me, I can't take liberties that I can take with my friends. So, like, I can't say something like CPT out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I can say it in a way that they know that I didn't learn that term from white people. Like, shit like that. But I made the mistake at the beginning of trying to do the, like, acknowledge that I was white.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you know, you ain't ever seen a white boy before, you know, just dumb shit. And of course, fucking, like, I just ate a dick. And then I was like, oh, it's just like real life. Everybody just wants me to be me.
Exactly.
Just like, you know,
funny's funny, man. Funny's funny.
Just they're gonna. And I remember the first time opening for Cheryl Underwood and all the staff. It was at the Kansas City Improv. And I knew everybody by then. And I'd been there a bunch of times and they were asking me if I was nervous and if I was worried. And I just remember saying, like, all I got's the jokes I wrote. It's too late.
There you go. There you go.
I was like, fuck them if they don't like me. I go, but mark my words, walk around the room. And if I'm doing well, I promise you, you're going to hear at least 3 or 4 times, this dude don't give a fuck. And I'm like, that's a compliment.
That's a great analogy for life right there in very many ways. Like, all I have are the jokes I wrote.
Yep.
That's a good way to look at life. Like, you know what I'm saying? You can put that in very many different scenarios and it resonates just the same. All I got is life is the jokes I wrote.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, you can, that should be a motto.
It's like I am who I am. Like, I am what I am. I brought what I brought. That I got the jokes I wrote.
Yeah. I fight till the finish because I eats my spinach. All right, brother. Thank you so much again. And I'm going to do you have time when we sign off? Can I give you a quick call?
Yeah, sure. Well, give me a minute. I got to go. Maybe he just went to bed, so I got to go make sure I put him in.
Yeah, go do all that.
I'll text you when we get off and, like, yo, just call me.
Perfect. All right. All right. But once again, I love you.
Love you, man.
You are one of my most absolute treasured relationships that I have. And I hope that as time goes on, we get to spend a lot more time together, like in the physical sense.
Absolutely.
Without fucking. I promise. That's gotta be the new thing now. Well, I'll see you soon, brother. I love you.
Appreciate you, Blanky. Thanks, man.
All right, man.
I love you, man. So be good.
Yep. Thanks. Peace, everybody.
All right. Peace.